Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Steve Prefontaine of the United States. Let's keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Ovid's first defeat? Ovid's in trouble. And so gets the revenge he wants.
Bradley is making a move. It has come down to this. Bradley and Salazar. The motorcycle's got to get out of the way. Here comes Bradley. He's got to make a move on Salazar.
Watch the clock. It's goal for both. And again, he's done it again. A new world record for Usain Bolt. They say lightning doesn't strike twice.
This is a Global CalLink prepaid call from
Meb Keflezgi.
From the Running Our Mouths podcast, this is almost like serial. One story told 26.2 miles at a time. I'm Chris Chavez. For the last year, I've spent every working day trying to process something a 38-year-old in Skechers was able to do for 2 hours in a single day in 2014. Or, if you want to get technical about it, and apparently I do, where a two-time Olympian was for 2 hours, 8 minutes, and 38 seconds at the 2014 Boston Marathon. It's actually 2015 now, and we all know what happened last year. Meb Keflezgi won the 2014 Boston Marathon, becoming the first American in 30 years to do so. Since we're still being technical and you're probably wondering who did it before him, it was Greg Myers in 1983. Americans in the running world will forever remember where they were when Meb won Boston. I had goosebumps. I was in the press room when Meb stunned and inspired an entire nation and even brought a room full of journalists who were taught not to clap at sporting events to a round of applause. I'm not a detective, and I'm actually still in school for another month or so. But yes, every day this year, I've tried to figure out how Meb exactly did it. I've stayed up long nights thinking about it, you know, even had to call a couple friends a couple times. I just want to point out something that I never really thought about before I started recording this podcast, and that is it's really hard to account for your time. You remember where you were when Meb won Boston, but how many people outside of the running world actually do? I actually went out and asked a couple of my friends on Marquette's college campus about it.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Pretty good. Just was wondering something. Do you know where you were April 21st last year?
April 21st of last year? Date doesn't really stick out to me, no. I don't know.
Do you know who Meb Keflezgi is?
Matt Keflezgi. It's Matt?
Meb.
Meb. I don't think so. Name doesn't really ring a bell, though.
Hey, Matt.
Hey.
Quick question. Do you know where you were April 21st last year?
Probably in class.
It was a Monday.
Yeah, I was probably in class.
Do you know who Meb Keflezgi is?
Language of origin.
Hey, Bodolay. Sorry to bother you. Really quick question. Do you know where you were April 21st last year?
Yes, I was watching the Boston Marathon.
Now, that last friend was definitely lying because he has zero interest in running and was also probably in class. But the real question that I want to pose on this show is a question that was asked around this time last year. Did Meb have some help when it comes to winning the race? I'm not talking about EPO, testosterone, or any performance-enhancing drug. I truly believe that Meb is an athlete that would never touch such products. I'm talking about teamwork, and that's teamwork in a sport where success tends to be measured by individual glory. Did he act alone in his success? Around the same time that Robert Johnson of Let'sRun.com was penning American Strong, the untold story of American teamwork and how Ryan Hall helped Meb Keflezighi win Boston. That's actually a mouthful of a title. I was also working on a similar piece on my plane ride back home from Boston. Rojo beat me to the publish button, so I held off from releasing a really similar piece. I'd like to revisit that story for a moment as we get ready for the 2015 Boston Marathon. Can Meb Keflezighi do it again? Now, there's no way those same tactics can be applied for a similar outcome, but hey, you never know. Boston's a race that sometimes someone wins in 2:03. Another year, it could be won in 2:12. But April 21st, 2014 was the ideal day. It was a day that America needed. Just 1 year ago, two twin bombings claimed the lives of three and injured over 200 in an attack that ruined a special day for thousands of runners. An MIT police officer was also killed by the same terrorist that sparked the bombings. But on race day in 2014, the weather was perfect, and the American support behind this race was like no other year. Meb Keflezighi, an immigrant from Eritrea and later turned American, stepped to the line with the names of the four victims on his bib. Not too many people were talking about Meb. Sure, the race was special to him, pretty much as someone entering their first Boston Marathon as a qualifier for the first time. But this happened to be the same Keflezighi that was seen at the start line of the 2004 Athens Olympic Marathon and 2009 New York City Marathon. This is the one that everyone doubted. Heck, I even doubted him. He was down on the start list based off personal best down the middle, and the previous fall he ran a terrible race at the New York City Marathon. I thought his days were numbered. Many would be quick to say that he should have retired after the fourth place finish at the 2012 Olympic Marathon in London. That would have been a pretty fairy tale ending. But the talks only added to Keflezighi's fire. He's an athlete that feeds off doubt. We're at the start line in Hopkinton. Dennis Kometo is the guy to watch. He destroyed the Chicago Marathon course record the previous fall. Wait, let's not count out Lalesa Desisa, who many forget won the race the year before because results pretty much became secondary after the bombings. Wait, Gebre Gebremariam ran 2:04 here before. Ryan Hall's poised for a great comeback, and he's also had success in Boston. Keep your eyes on all of them in this race. Don't mind Meb. He's just there because he's an American running figure. He won't do much harm. That's what we all told ourselves for the first 8 miles of the race. Then Meb took off. It was weird. Josvet Boyt of the ASICS Mammoth Track Club went with him, and the television cameras followed them. Now, it's really hard to know what happened to that backpack of runners unless you happen to catch a glimpse of them along the course, or you were one of them. So that's what I did. I caught up with two of the runners to really share what happened in that chase group. I'll start off with the next American who finished behind Meb. That's Nick Arcinaga of Under Armour. I asked him to take me through things before the start of the race.
So Nick, was there any conversation before the race about 2014 being an American's year to win it all? Was there a plan?
I don't remember any of the conversations on the start line. I remember I've talked to a few different interviewers and a couple of the other guys saying that this would be the year, a spectacular year for an American to win. I never actually talked with any guys like Ryan or Meb about having like a race plan, a race strategy to help put into effect. But as the race kind of grew on, like 10K into the race, I was looking around, and it was one of the first times that I had been in a race where, rather than the World Marathon Major race, where there were more Americans in the pack than there were Kenyans or Ethiopians. So it was kind of pumped myself up. I'm sure everyone thought that the guys were doing the same. Like, there's so many like guys that we race all the time that we are friends with that are out here competing, and we can actually help each other out some way or another. And then it was around mile 9 or so. I forget how it ended up that way. It's just got Boyd, Ned, myself, and then Ryan Hall kind of running the line at the lead end of the pack. Then Meb and Yosef, we kind of like picked up the pace a little bit, which was faster than I wanted to go, so I could not go with them. And Ryan just kind of got on my shoulder as well. It probably told himself that he didn't want to kind of make a move at that point either. And Meb and JV just kind of opened up with 20 meter, 30 meter, 40 meter gaps, kind of pulled away slowly from us. And the Efren guys trailing behind us weren't really paying attention too much to those guys taking off. I'm not sure if they realized it was Meb or if they just thought some guys were making a break and they're just going to wait and roll them up later on the race. But from the point that they opened up enough of a gap and till about half marathon or so, Ryan and I kind of were running side by side at the head of this, head of the chase back at that point. And Ryan would just comment, say, "Hey man, ease up a little bit. Don't do the work for these guys. Let them go ahead of us." It's kind of encouraged me, like, "You're doing everything all right. Just make sure you're not gravity helping them catch these guys."
Now, just a quick aside. This past week, Wilson Chibet, the second-place finisher from last year's Boston Marathon, was mentioned in an article from a Kenyan website about his return to Boston this year. He said, quote, "I'm going to win the race. I assure you that. That is my title. Now I'm going to win it," end quote. In that same interview, he said he didn't see Meb until the course flattened out. Actually, Chibet was quoted as saying he thought Meb was a pace setter, and by the time he realized Keflezighi was a competitor, that it was too late. But did he actually say that? Really? He thought there was a pace setter in a race that traditionally has no rabbits? He thought the 2004 Olympic silver medalist and 2009 New York City Marathon champion was in it as a pacer? Come on now. Later on, the folks at Let'sRun.com and Chibet's management said the interview never happened. Regardless, Chibet comes into 2015 hungry after falling short in 2014. Keflezighi stealthily got by last year. Now back to the Americans. Ryan Hall, a true man for others. Guided by faith in his training, someone became a sacrificial lamb and thought about helping build a cushion for Meb more than, you know, his own performance. As I mentioned before, Hall's return to the marathon was highly anticipated. Many thought he would have another good performance to remind everyone of how good he is before the Olympic trials in 2016. Boston would have been a good setting to do that. Now, after the race, Ryan actually didn't talk to the media. He caught the next flight home really soon after the race. He finished 20th in 2 hours and 17 minutes. I mean, he was happy for Meb, but the elation would wear off eventually, and he faced his own result. It was a little disappointing for a man who previously ran 204 there just 3 years before. Now, I remember being in the hotel looking for Hall, and no sign of him. His agent, Ray Flynn, was the only one around from the Hall camp, and he had told me Ryan took off for the airport. Later on, Hall would release a statement through Sports Illustrated's Tim Layden about the Let's Run story, but I wanted to hear it for myself. I actually finally spoke to Ryan just a couple weeks ago about Boston.
I knew that this was, like, going to be the biggest marathon of importance for America that, you know, I guess arguably has ever been run, you know, in the wake of what happened with the bomb. So, you know, on the starting line, like, I felt like more than any other time, like as Americans, we should all be, like, banded together, like we're in this together, like, fighting together, you know? And so, you know, obviously, on the starting line, like, my training had gone well in Ethiopia, and I was feeling good, and, you know, I was hoping to be the guy to break the tape and win the race, but early on in the race, it became apparent to me that Meb was feeling good, and then he got a bit of a gap at 6 miles, and, like, I tried to go with it, but he didn't even really make a super hard move, but it felt like beyond my threshold. Like, I was going to put myself in a little bit of a hole if I went with it. So I couldn't go with it, and no one else was going with it except for the other American guy that went with them. And so, you know, they just had this little gap, and then it was, like, me and, I think, Nick, me and Nick were in the chase group, and we were leading, like, all the African guys, and we were keeping them within striking distance of Mav. And we were doing this for, like, a couple of miles. I felt like it was, I don't know exactly how long. And I was just thinking in my head, like, what we should be doing, you know? And, like I felt like a win for America was a win for me, you know? Like, if I wasn't going to be the one to have that day, then I should at least, like, do what I can to give Meb and the other American guy, give him a shot, you know, like give him as much of a chance as any, or at least not like help the other guys to stick close to him, you know, like it's one, like I didn't feel like it was right to be the guy. Like I just was thinking like Tour de France style, like if two guys of Garmin made a break, like with the Garmin guys wouldn't be leading the peloton to keep them close. Like it just, after a couple miles, I was thinking through that, like this just doesn't make sense, you know, like why am I keeping all these guys close to Meb, who's not only like my countryman, but also my friend and my runner. I've looked up to him ever since I got into the sport. He's a big reason why I got into marathoning. So after a couple miles, I told Nick, I was like, hey man, let's just get out of the lead. I was like, these guys want to stay close and they want to catch up to Meb, like they're going to have to do the work to get there, but we're not going to help them out, you know. And then it was cool that like Nick was like on board with that. So he got out of the lead and then we slowed down, you know, like our second group totally just hit the brakes when we got out of the lead. And I couldn't believe it. I was like literally shaking my head. I was like, I can't believe that these guys are letting Meb get a gap right now. I was like, this is not like, you know, a nobody. Like, he just won a silver medal in the Olympics, won New York. Like, you know, let a guy like this get a gap, you know? Especially on a day like today when there's so much excitement around the race for all the American guys. So, yeah, and then like some of the other American guys, they caught up to our group, and then they'd go to the lead and start hammering, and I'd have to tell them and be like, guys, not today. Like, if these guys want to do the work, then they can do the work, but like, we're not going to keep them close, you know? I was like, if we, one of us finishes third to two American guys, then that's great, you know? Like, I'll take that. So, like, we'll sort it out when we get down the road further, but right now, let's just chill out. So, yeah, they just kept getting further and further away, and I didn't know what was going to happen, you know? But I was glad to be able to give them a little bit more of a gap to work with, you know, and Meb just ran the race of his life, and, you know, to have his best day ever on that day was pretty amazing, and he totally deserved that. It was a big victory, but it was a cool lesson for me, too, to, like, be able to, I felt like Meb's victory was, like, my victory, too, you know, like, to be, like, yeah, Meb was the guy who won, but it was cool that, like, I felt like as a team, like, we won, and as a country, like, we won, you know, and to just be able to, like partake in celebrating with him and what he had done was pretty cool.
So there you have it. Ryan Hall confirms the story. That's how the Americans won the 2014 Boston Marathon. That's how Meb Keflezighi got some help in the process. But actually, not so fast. I'm not done. Why don't we hear the story from the man himself? How did Meb Keflezighi win Boston running from the front? Here's what he had to say about the moments leading up to that perfect day.
Actually, we prayed before I left the hotel. May his God will be done. And then I also prayed when I left Mammoth Lakes. I said, you know, I've been away from my family and going to give all that I have. And training has not gone the way as planned, as, you know, not super fast, but I'm healthy and consistent. And I want to go and give my best. And, you know, you can't think what just within the few minutes before the race, but I've been carrying that weight on my shoulder for over 365 days that I need to do something to go back and do something positive for the race. And because I was a spectator watching it there and missed the bombing by 5 minutes, otherwise I was there for 4+ hours. So
If it wasn't for that appointment, I would have been there. But that appointment kind of got me out of that situation, finish line. And it was a joy to see people finish and celebrate and congratulate each other. And, you know, some people sprint and to break, whether it's 3 hours or there's to break 3:20 or whatever it was, you know, getting the best out of yourself. And I said, I was planning on writing a speech about marathoning and what it meant to me. And all of a sudden, you know, I was taking notes and my phone and whatnot. And then my friend Rob Hill was there, gave me his jacket. I stayed as long as I can because we're getting chillier. And then, but because of the appointment, I had to leave. And I left Howie there and said, because we had a couple of people running for the foundation too. So basically, you know, that's what happened and the bombing happened. And I've been training hard and trying to do whatever I can. In fact, I remember sending text Ryan Hall on the after the mail finished in 2013. I said, okay, we can do this next year. Oh, I think we can do this. He's like, yeah, we'll get after it next year is what he said. And so it's been constantly thinking about it, but the last thing I said is, you know, I know it's going to be emotional. People are going to say, how are you going to control? I just got to relax and take what I can, and at the same time don't get carried away. And that's what I did going to the starting line. I was relaxed and give it the best shot that I can. And in fact, I tell, you know, I've been doing a lot of the training myself and what my body needs, expand instead of 7 days to 9 days, and listen to my body, whether I need to do more speed or tempo or long run. So I was in Mammoth Lakes for, 4 weeks by myself trying to, you know, do what I can. And then come race day, just decided to tell Coach Larson, I'm going to draft. Those guys are going to go crazy, and I'm going to draft until the last 2-3 miles. And once the gun went off, everything changed. I decided to do what I need to do. And, you know, what they didn't go, I wanted to get them to the front to control the pace so they won't go out fast, or because I'd done that in 2006 mistake. You know, ran 102.44 world record pace and then kind of crashed. So I didn't want that to have, so just went for it and took the lead and controlled the pace. And then about 4-5 miles or so, the Ethiopian tried to slow down, and I just kept pushing and, you know, maintaining it. It let me have some gap, and then Joseph Alboy went with me, and the rest is, you know, how it came out.
Now, what do you remember exactly about the moment you crossed the finish line, especially, you know, there was a warm embrace with you and your brother, tears of joy. Your wife was the first one to hug you as soon as you crossed the finish line. What did that moment mean to you?
Tear of joy, because we know down deep what it meant for me to win that race, not just on that day, but just for my career, and to do it on that most important day when people thought, you know, some people had less than 1% chance for me to win it. So, but you know, my team thought I can pull it off. They support me, whether it's my wife or Coach Lawson supporting me and Howie supporting me and many others that are, you know, behind the scenes. They want to see me do well. You know, they put their time and energy and so I can be ready as possible when it comes to competition. And they sacrifice a lot on their behalf. And for me, it was, was all in for that day. I said, probably wouldn't do Boston unless I win this race. So it was do or die for me personally, for my career, but also for the reasons I talked to you earlier. For 365 days, I've been thinking, what can I do? I hope I can pull it off. And that was a personal commitment that I made. And, you know, I say it, but I also have to live up to it, and I have to execute. And then, you know, it was happening, and obviously the guy was closing on me toward the end, but at the same time, I have no idea how long, you know, it's point-to-point course. I had a disadvantage because they can see the press truck, they can see me, and I can't see how long they've been chasing me or whatnot. So when I look back, sometimes the instinct tells you to look back, or your instinct tells you to do things, and that's what happened, and then I have to make that decision whether slow down, save some energy for Burleson, or trying to maintain the gap or extend the gap. You know, nobody told me do this or do that. I have to use that cognitively to say, okay, does this make sense? No, it doesn't make sense. No, the first one was not so, it was stupid rule. Then don't wait for him because he's gonna have the mental edge. And then it's like, okay, plan B. And now, just like I had plan A to win and podium or personal best, now those goals have changed to maintain the gap or extend the gap. And when you look back, how often should you look back? Just because you don't want to give sign of weakness or him closing. Are you looking to say I'm tired, or you say no? Did I make the gap bigger? Or and then you say, okay, if he was feeling that good, then he should have caught up to me. You know, so you have constantly to think and change those things. And you know, obviously, once I got in the last mile, I kind of feel I think I could get it because he'd been chasing me for 2 miles that I know of, and could have closed the gap then. But coming to Boylston, I just said, you know what? I know I had to cross myself. I said, thank you, Lord, for this opportunity, and I'm going to give it my best shot. And it was such a wonderful moment to just chant USA, USA to Boylston. See what was a horrific and scary time for us a year later. The first one hugged me, and then Howie, and then Coach Larson was there. And it was, you cannot replay them. He can't collect every minute of it because people are taking you from here to there, take the do this, do that. So it was a tough moment, but at the same time, it was a joyous moment, and then a lot of tears of joy.
Meb Keflezighi made history. His career is now over 100% fulfilled. What happens in Boston on April 20th this year is only icing on the cake. We've been having a lot of icing on the cake with Meb over the last couple years. So now that you know how last year's race went down, I'll be curious to see how tactics will change. There's still some unanswered questions, though. Like, does Boylston Street have a shrimp sale at the Crab Crib? What's up with the Nisha call? Is there a payphone at the Best Buy in Cambridge or in Watertown? You know what? I'll do my best to answer those. Live from Boston, next week on the Running Our Mouths podcast.